Hello and welcome to Radio Edu Talk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay in Fife, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening Dr. Ellen Buren of the University of Edinburgh. And over the next 20-25 minutes or so, we'll be talking about her new book on lifelong learning participation in a changing policy context. Welcome to Radio Edu Talk, Ellen.
Yeah, hello. I'm here.
Great, and you're very loud and clear, Ellen, that's great. I'll just say at this point, if you're listening to the live show, you can get in touch as usual in two ways. You can email any questions or comments for Ellen to edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter and just include the hashtag edutalk. So to start off with, Ellen, could you give us a bit of information about your background in academia and education?
Yeah, so I'm currently a Chancellor's Fellow / lecturer at the Murray House School of Education here in Edinburgh. I've been here since May 2012, so something like 4.5 years now. But I actually grew up in Belgium, really the northern part of Belgium, Flanders, very close to the border with the Netherlands. So I actually did a PhD in education at the University of Leuven in Belgium. But then for my kind of post-PhD life, I made the move to the UK. So actually, I finished my master's in 2005. And then at that time, around the summer of 2005, when I finished my PhD, there was like a group of 13 partner countries in Europe who were just starting a new big lifelong learning project sponsored, funded by the European Commission. And the University of Leuven in Belgium was actually the Flemish participant in that big project. And they needed a research assistant who was going to work with them around issues related to participation and motivation of adults. So I got that specific research assistant job because it was like a project for 5 years. It was long enough to get like a PhD out of it as well. So that is a bit my general background. So I've mainly worked around lifelong learning issues in Europe with a big focus on participation studies, and also I've done quite a lot of work in working on big surveys related to lifelong learning, like working with the labor force survey. I've also worked with an adult education survey developed by Europe as well. And recently, I've also undertaken a 3-month secondment with the OECD in Paris to work on adult education data they've basically recently collected in the last few years. So I'm really like an adult education person, and I have an interest in both the kind of theorization of participation issues, but from an empirical point of view, I also like to work with the kind of large survey data that are available. So that's a bit my background.
That's great, Ellen. And would it be fair to say that the book is a kind of combination of your work to date?
Yeah, so actually, because I started like my PhD then early 2006, and of course the very first thing that you do whenever you start whatever PhD you start is of course really trying to read up on the kind of previous literature that has been published in your field so far, and then try to identify a bit the gaps and how you can take it forward. So one of the main books published in adult education participation studies was actually published in 1992, which was called Why Adults Learn. It was published by Sean Courtney. And actually that book really started from a very strong social psychological tradition, where he actually tried to explain participation based on people's individual motivation, people's individual attitudes towards learning and so on. but actually nowadays, that's basically a bit the result of studying participation issues in lifelong learning for about 10 years now. So first as part of my PhD and now as part of the kind of academic position that I'm in, we know that in the last 10 years, actually, our understanding of why people participate in post-compulsory lifelong learning activities has really changed in the last few decades. So I think it's there a bit a matter of when I started my PhD, I always felt that specific information on how people in the field explain why adults participate or not is actually available, was available in a quite fragmented way. And I was actually thinking it would be really good if someone could actually bring all these elements together, because one of the things that I do in the book is I really try to focus on an interdisciplinary theory, which is actually the subtitle of the book. So I basically say, if I ask a psychologist why do adults participate in lifelong learning activities or not, the psychologist is likely to say, well, it's because some people are more motivated than others, because people have other have different attitudes towards learning activities and so on, and people with a lack of motivation, people with bad levels of attitude and so on, won't participate. But then at the same time, when I go to the sociological literature and when I ask a sociologist, why do adults participate in lifelong learning or not, they will basically tell me a story about, well, it's all about social class, and if you come from a good socioeconomic background, then the chances that you're successful in education are stronger. It's all about the habitus that you grew up with. Adult education is a way of climbing the social ladder and so on. So I get a slightly different answer. But also, if I ask an economist why adults would participate in lifelong learning activities or not, the economist is likely going to come up with an answer like, well, it's a cost-benefit analysis. You have to pay, you have to invest time. The time that you're investing in your learning, you can't really work, so that basically cuts you down from your income. But on the other hand, once you have invested, you also want to see the benefits. You want a better life. You want a higher salary in the end. You want a better job in the end, and so on. So this information is available in a rather fragmented way. But what I actually wanted to do is bring these components a bit together in one overarching interdisciplinary theory. My guess when I started my PhD is that a book like that would pop up in the coming years, but it didn't happen. So basically, when I got a job here in Edinburgh, I thought, like, I think I'm now ready to do something like that myself. And then I basically kind of wrote up the book proposal and got a contract. And that's basically how it all started.
And just for maybe the benefit of our listeners, then, are we clear at this point, Ellen, about what we actually mean by lifelong learning or adult lifelong learning? Or is it still important, or have we managed to firm up the kind of three or more distinctions then, sort of formal, non-formal, etc.?
Yeah, so quite often when we talk about lifelong learning, we would quite often distinguish between three forms of lifelong learning, and that's also something I explain in the book. So on the one hand, we talk about formal adult education, which is really the kind of, it represents the structure of the compulsory education, the initial education system. It's credential-based. So at the end, when you finished up your course successfully, you will get some sort of credit that is basically officially recognized. A second example is non-formal education. So non-formal education is also an organized form of education, like, for example, an officially organized workshop or an officially organized seminar, an officially organized distance learning course. But on the other hand, finishing up successfully doesn't really give you some sort of credential or some sort of certificate. Maybe you can get a certificate of attendance or whatever, but it doesn't have the same kind of civic value as a qualification in the formal education system would have. Then, of course, we also have informal learning, which is more the kind of at random learning that happens, you know, all day round when you interact with people and so on. Now, policymakers have their own kind of indicators in how many people on an annual basis or on a kind of 4 weeks basis in some surveys, they want to participate in lifelong learning activities. And actually, if we use the term lifelong learning as it's been used by, for example, policymakers from the European Union, that reflects on formal education and non-formal education. So it basically excludes the informal learning side, because actually informal learning is something that happens kind of quite at random, non-intentional, accidental during the day anyway. So you would assume that that is something that most people actually engage in anyway. But the participation in formal and non-formal learning is something much more complex to achieve than the informal learning. So I would dare say the literature I draw upon in the book actually really focuses on the formal and the non-formal active participation in organized forms of learning.
So, and is there a history, Ellen, of us as a kind of Western societies moving away from promoting or valuing kind of social learning and moving towards a kind of certificated types of learning and really aligning those types of kind of deliberate learning or planned learning with the whole notion of lifelong learning and, you know, I suppose further down the line, linking it to ideas of the knowledge economy and individuals' successful participation within it?
Yeah, I suppose, of course, it's not just about the kind of... I think up to a certain level, when we're talking about participation, it's, of course, quite important that we try to recognize what are now actually the benefits of participation. Because, as you say, through daily interactions, of course, people can also learn a lot and maybe increase their knowledge and skills about things. But I suppose nowadays the entire discourse is very much related indeed in what you touch upon, this concept of the knowledge economy. So it's really like we're living in a society that is very rapidly evolving, and new technologies are being introduced all the time. And we really have to be kind of innovative in our economy, because we're constantly, like, if we think about Europe, we're constantly in kind of competition with the Asian markets, with the American markets and so on. So as an individual, it's very important that, you know, starting from early childhood, starting from whenever you're still in school, that you learn to learn, and that you basically learn to constantly keep your level of knowledge and skills up to date. And basically one way of doing that is through the formal education system, but also through kind of organized forms, you know, that are basically organized in the workplace or in other segments. I think what you say about the social learning, we know nowadays that actually if you look at the participation rates in lifelong learning, that actually a quite high percentage, the majority of participation is actually non-formal education in lifelong learning. And also if you would make a distribution of whether participation is more because of social activities, kind of personal interest, or because of more the vocational job-related reasons, then we know that the majority of lifelong learning that takes place nowadays is actually job-related. But that actually links with another aspect that I develop in my book as well, because we know, for example, that in some countries, this vocational aspect is much stronger than in other countries. So what I actually told you in the beginning about, it's all about, for the psychologist, it's all about attitudes, motivation, and so on. But on the other hand, if that's solely the case, then why are people in a European country like Sweden participating more than in a southern European country like Italy or Spain. So there should be something in the kind of the way education systems are organized, the way in which the labor market is organized in countries is also strongly related with whether people are going to participate or not. So some countries have more a tradition of valuing the social learning, while in other countries you will find a stronger embedded system that is focused on vocational learning. Think, for example, about education systems in German-speaking countries. I have much more a tradition of introducing vocational education already as a specific strand in schools and so on. So it's there a bit like, although I really try to bring things together in the book, it's quite important to recognize that the way we think about lifelong learning is different according to the country in which it takes place. And that's actually a very important aspect of the book as well.
And I wonder what other kind of influences that there has been, Ellen, on kind of changing mindsets and changing practices across Western countries. And, you know, does the OECD have a big influence, and the European Union, ideas of globalisation, or is a lot of it down to traditions and you know, economic and social, etc., policies within individual countries?
Yeah, so actually, a part in the book, if you refer to the role of the OECD, for example, in the book, I actually refer to this kind of governance by numbers approach. And if we're talking about making lifelong learning systems better across the world and make sure that basically developed countries are getting up to speed and basically become better. Along the way, like a nice example of that is the recent survey of adult skills that has been undertaken as part of the program for international assessment of adult competencies. So that's basically a big survey that the OECD has done with around something like 30 countries at the moment. So actually, one way of achieving these goals, achieving the policy goals, what we want in becoming, you know, kind of fostering this knowledge economy and really making sure that education systems perform well, is actually through a mechanism of some sort of naming and shaming. So we let people fill in surveys and we measure their skills, we measure their educational attainment. But then at the end of the day, we see that some countries are performing better than others. And basically, that is a bit a matter of what I would call putting peer pressure on countries to basically say, like, well, in some countries in Europe or some countries in OECD countries, people are performing better. And this is likely to be the result of the way in which their education systems have been designed and the way their labor market has been designed. So if you as a country score low on educational attainment, score low on skills, let it be like literacy, numeracy, or problem solving, if you score low as a country, then that is likely going to be the result of poorly developed lifelong learning systems. So is there something you could actually do there? So it's also a kind of element of policy learning that I want to discuss as well, and which I touch upon in the book as well. Like, on the one hand, we have this kind of theories of participation that really focus on the kind of individual level. But on the other hand, of course, we also have the kind of broader policy level. And is there something that the way in which these levels interact with each other, that countries can be learning from each other in how they can attract more, especially socially disadvantaged groups, into lifelong learning systems? Because we know, even in the countries with the highest participation rates, like, take for example the Nordic Scandinavian countries, participation rates are really high there. But on the other hand, it's quite universal that countries suffer from having a lower proportion of socially disadvantaged groups participating in lifelong learning. So it's also a bit from a kind of social justice perspective that I think it's very important to further understand how individual countries can basically improve their systems to make lifelong learning a bit not just lifelong, but also kind of life-wide and accessible for everyone.
Now, I wonder, Ellen, if you could take us through some of your recommendations then, and but maybe before that, I wonder if there was any other findings that you'd like to share with listeners.
Yeah, so part in the book is, of course, also a bit about how to measure participation. It's a bit like one of the previous questions that you asked me about what is the definition of lifelong learning. In the end, if we look at the statistics produced by either European Commission or the OECD, it's quite often just these kind of two broad categories of formal education and non-formal education. But of course, in reality, it's a bit more sophisticated than that. And it's also a bit the way of how do we measure it? How do we capture this? Also, if we talk about the benefits of learning, the book is really focused on participation, and participation is like a big buzzword within policy discourse. Like, we want people to participate, and we want them to participate because we think that participation is going to generate a range of benefits. But are these benefits really, are they really there? Are they real? Are people really learning and picking up something new if they participate in lifelong learning? If I want to control that for a range of countries across Europe and learn from experiences in how countries deal with advancing the lives, advancing the knowledge and skills of their adult population, I actually need longitudinal data. Some countries have longitudinal data, but there's not like a very good comparative database that is longitudinal in nature, because surveys done by the European Commission are actually cross-sectional. They do them now, and then they repeat them within this and a few years, but actually the people in these surveys will be different. So you can't really follow up individuals. So that is, you know, another part of the book. Then if it's really about recommendations, so yeah, towards policymakers, it's definitely like, do something about collecting data. But I think if it's really about, if you're an adult education practitioner, what can I do to make the kind of lifelong learning participation system a bit more equal? I think then the focus should really be on the kind of socially disadvantaged adults, which have difficulties in finding their ways into the adult education system. Now, one of the things is that, and that's also something I touch upon in one of the chapters, is if you really look at the barriers that people are facing to make the decision to participate in lifelong learning and jump over these kind of constraints they're experiencing, I think one big issue is just like raise the awareness of what's out there. Because we know that, for example, something like an information barrier really exists. Like, people actually just don't participate because they are not really aware of what is available. So it's these kind of things that, for example, through working with other service providers that people make use of. Like, think, for example, about every once in a while and then goes to the GP or goes to the dentist. Can basically adult education centers be a bit smarter in disseminating or distributing their kind of course catalogs through these kind of channels? Because nowadays, the problem is a bit that highly educated people pick up on these kind of offers that are available, but some people just need a bit more help in accessing these channels. So that is definitely something that I pick up on in the recommendations in the book. So that is basically to give you an example of what I would say is quite important to focus on.
And I'll just remind listeners that you can email or get in touch via Twitter just in the last couple of minutes of tonight's show if you have any questions or comments for Ellen. Ellen, I wonder you know, what kind of response have you had to the book?
I've done some keynotes. Recently, I've done two keynotes at conferences. I've also spoken at a conference in Leicester. So basically, Scutria. I don't know whether you know whether listeners or know Scutria, but Scutria is basically the biggest academic adult education association in Britain, and I'm the chair of Scutria. So we do like an annual conference. In 2016, our conference was in Leicester. In 2017, first week of July, we will have an adult education conference in Edinburgh. So I presented my book there, and well, people in general seem to be happy. I seem to find that people seem to like it, so that's quite positive. I suppose it's really a bit. The question about why it focuses mainly on formal and non-formal education is a question I got a few times. So it's there a bit actually quite interesting that you asked that question as well. Like, is society maybe a bit less interested nowadays in the kind of information or learning that we pick up through informal learning? And I would say there it's kind of, well, all is very much focused on this kind of competition and the kind of economic value of learning and so on. So it's a bit of pity there, I think, that, and I think we should really take care in the next few decades that we don't end up with, you know, seeing something, seeing lifelong learning as something that is only kind of worth investing in if it's kind of generating more money in the future, because it's basically a pity, because actually, there is quite a lot of learning going on that can be quite, hopefully, beneficial to people's sense of belonging to the community or kind of overall life happiness. And I think it's quite important that we kind of keep on recognizing that aspect of lifelong learning as well. It's just like not the scope of, it wasn't really the scope of this book. But I'm quite sure that in the rest of my career, I will kind of pay attention to these kind of aspects as well.
Ellen, I'd like to say a big thank you on behalf of EduTalk listeners for you taking time out this evening to join us on the show. And just before you go, could you give listeners an idea of the kind of best place or best places online for them to obtain your book?
So if you go to the Palgrave Macmillan website, so that is basically the publisher of the book. So Palgrave Macmillan sells the book, but it's also on sale on, for example, the Amazon website as well. So I suppose these are probably the two easiest channels to obtain the book. I haven't really visited bookshops to see whether my book is on sale there. I haven't really done that yet. But Amazon and Palgrave Macmillan website, it's definitely the places to go if you want to buy it. There's also an ebook for Kindle readers, so
absolutely,
that's an option as well.
Yeah, that's the one that I went for. And I'll just remind everybody that the title of Ellen's book is Lifelong Learning, Participation in a Changing Policy Context, and Interdisciplinary Theory. Ellen, thanks again for joining us on EduTalk. We'll hope to have you back on the show in months and years to come, and best wishes.